everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom. And Tom, so it begins. The last time we had excessive heat warnings, I know we had some into October, actually, of last year. So, but this is the first. Here we go. And it's June, so I mean, I could live with a couple. And this one, unlike last summer, which went on for 10 days sometimes, this one's only 2 days.
The heat. And let me get my button
there
pushed. There we go.
Okay.
Yeah, the heat. But, you know, interestingly, I'm seeing reports of more and more places and areas that are getting hotter temperatures sooner. For example, the mountains around Flagstaff are expected to get into the low 90s for the earliest time in record.
Low 90s in Flagstaff. That is very in
in the higher elevations.
In the higher elevations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't like to see that happening, but things are warming up, and we live in, of course, a very warm area. The Buckmaster Show on Wednesday, June 5th, 2024. We're delighted that now our program coming up on 13 and a half years with our radio program, 22 years prior to that, over on TV on Channel 6. So let's see, it's like coming up 36 years. I've been involved in delivering information here in town on the radio and TV. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, which is part of the Bustos Media Complex, now five radio stations under one roof, including our newest acquisition, a very popular station called The Drive. A lot of people love The Drive, including me, but I also love being on this station, 1030 KVOI The Voice, our Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. Worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. And, of course, that is the place we've pretty much got every show. I want to say 95% of the programs we've done over the last 13 and a half years are very easy to access on my website. Just put in the name of the person that I interviewed, and it will pop up. People like Kevin Dahl, who is with me in studio, the vice mayor for the city of Tucson. Kevin, a Democrat representing Ward Number 3. And before we talk with Kevin and welcome him, I do want to say that our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Kevin, good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to see you, too.
Always a pleasure to see Kevin Dahl. And before being elected, he took office the end of 2021, so he's in his first four-year term. But prior to that, he had some very interesting environmental-oriented positions. He was the Arizona Program Manager for the National Parks Conservation Association, and he was also heading up the Native Seed Search program and the Tucson Audubon Society, soon to be called the Tucson Blank Society.
The group's going to determine what their new name will be.
I mean, what's going on there?
Well, if I was the decision maker, I'd keep the Audubon brand because everybody knows Audubon Society. But we are reexamining history, and apparently James Audubon was had some views that people don't like about slavery and about Native Americans. So it's also an interesting bill that the idea that birds should be named after people is under review too. The American Ornithological Society.
What?
Yeah, the group that decides that Wilson's Warbler is Wilson's Warbler has decided that it was pretty random what people's names were attached to the birds. You know, someone who is a friend of the ornithologist who identified this as a separate species gets their name on it. So they're going through and systematically naming things. So like Lucy's Warbler, it's been proposed, would be Mesquite Warbler because you often see them nesting in mesquite trees.
Oh my goodness.
So there are changes coming down in the bird world all over.
The brand. People know the Audubon Society. And Audubon cataloged extensive work, didn't he, throughout North America?
His paintings of the birds were beautiful.
Yeah.
And really...
I mean, I've got a huge book at home of his stuff.
Yeah.
Not original stuff, but reproductions, but it's beautiful.
His work, which was widely publicized, kind of motivated people to go out and look at birds. And Audubon societies, small groups were formed in cities across the country, and eventually there was a national Audubon. So I'm a little sad. I've told the director of the local Audubon, if they do that, I'll form my own Tucson Audubon Society. But I decided I don't have the energy for that, and I'll support what they do.
Yeah, so busy day yesterday. I think you spent many hours at City Hall. It was budget day, the approval for the formal package, $2.4 billion. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot. Someone actually at a hearing last night said if we were a corporation, we would be in one of the top 50 corporations in the country with a budget of $2 billion. Now, if a lot of other cities have big budgets too, but I think that gives you the scale of what we do, you know, roads, fire, police, garbage, planning, zoning, and providing all sorts of services.
Even, actually, that's the county. A lot of people are complaining now about the sewer roaches. It's sewer roach season. First of all, I hate roaches. And the big ones are, I guess, the sewer roaches. But there is something that homeowners can do, right?
That's right. These were bothering a neighborhood in my ward, and I saw on their listserv that they had researched possibilities to deal with them. I know that some people use the big roach motels,
and I think
you do too.
I do.
But the county has some simple advice. Mm-hmm. Close your drains. If your kitchen sink, you can close it, like when you do when you fill up. Close it so they can't come up at night, which they tend to do. Sewer cockroaches like it dark and cool things. And when it gets hot in June, they're looking for cool sewage places to do.
Yeah.
The county, which runs our sewer system, they spray in the pipes, not in your home, but in the streets, in your neighborhood, probably every 2 to 3 years. So if you see an abundance of them, you can contact the county and they'll come and inspect their pipes. And if it's time to spray, they'll spray. They also suggest putting bleach down drains.
A little bit of bleach?
The cockroaches hate the smell of bleach. I kind of do too. But that might be something that helps.
When I get home, I'll be looking for the bleach under the sink. When I look under the sink, I won't see any of the
I don't think
sewer.
You're alone as hating cockroaches. Oh, I don't think there's very many fans of them.
Move on from cockroaches to something a lot happier, and that's the Tucson Roadrunners who are going to stay playing hockey here for a few years, right?
Yeah. Congratulations to city staff and Rio Nuevo and the hockey owner to negotiate, even though we've lost the major team from Tempe, our team, the Roadrunners here in Tucson, will stay through their contract, which is last two more years, and they're adding another year. And in exchange for that, we're letting them play 6 home games up in Tempe. Hockey makes money for us. It makes money for the convention center and for Rio Nuevo. And there's a lot of fans. It's really fun. I threw out the first hockey ceremoniously once last year and stayed for the game. And it reminded me of going to hockey games when I was a kid, when I liked the aggressive enthusiasm, the loud
athletes.
Music. It's
they
a great
are,
entertainment.
They're incredible athletes. You've got to be able to obviously skate, your endurance. I mean, it's just amazing. And I played a little hockey as a kid, and when the puck would hit the stick, usually it would ricochet, you know, into the stands or something. But with these pros, they can just, you know, fire that puck over to their colleagues, and the puck hits the stick, and it stays there.
They know what they're doing.
Anyway, from cockroaches to hockey, and going back to the budget with this package, we're okay, I guess, this year, but then downstream, coming downstream from Phoenix, could be some changes.
Yeah, it's a balanced budget, and by charter, we want a balanced budget. But we also do a five-year projection, and based on what we project revenues to be, we're going to probably going to have to cut services or search for other sources of money starting the next fiscal year, which starts next year's July. And this is primarily because of the shared funding from the state. State income tax, a portion of it is shared with counties and cities, and they've cut that back because they're not raising as much money as before for two reasons. One, they implemented a flat tax, which means people who have large incomes who could afford to pay a little higher percentage pay the same as everybody else. So we're losing that revenue. And the educational voucher system, I understand you broke the news yesterday.
We did.
Is breaking the bank.
We broke the news yesterday via the Grand Canyon Institute, and we'll talk more about this after the break, at the mid-break, with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo. But here's the bottom line, $337 million for fiscal year 24. That's costing the taxpayers.
It's never projected to be anywhere near
that
much.
And there's a lot of accountability issues that do need to be addressed. Yeah. Why don't we pause right here? We'll have more with the Vice Mayor of the City of Tucson. Kevin Dahl is with me in studio, and the plan is to bring him in the first Wednesday of every month. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the midweek edition, and Tucson City Councilman Kevin Dahl is with us. He is also the Vice Mayor of the City of Tucson. Wanted to talk a little bit about the swimming pool situation and kind of the rollout of the messaging was not good. As Tim Tomier, the new city manager who was sworn in yesterday, who was on my program Friday, admitted, it just was kind of a disaster the way the rollout of the summer season about pools being closed. But I think things have sort of been straightened out. Is that what I'm hearing?
That is right. The good news is that we've added plenty of more hours. So you can go onto the Parks and Rec City of Tucson website and find out the adjusted hours. There's more hours at many of the pools. It was a problem because the Parks and Rec has a limited budget. Mm-hmm. They had overspent last summer, and then it had been asked to rein it in, and they reined it in on pool hours. And my office and Paul Cunningham's office were both a huge supporter of the public pools. We're very surprised at the last minute to find this out. pool hours are important. And as families make their plans for the summer, I'm going to do a camp here on Tuesday afternoons. We'll go to this pool to see the hours cut back. We got a lot of complaints. And thank you, Tim Tamir and Parks and Rec, for responding and figuring out where the park pools could open. The solutions were creative. They added more hours to some lifeguards. And
bottom line, it's pretty much like last year's.
I haven't looked at the numbers, but it's as close to last year's as they could get.
All right. You had some complaints about towing services, automobile towing services here in town, and you decided to take some action.
Yeah. A year and a half ago, we were getting complaints that, unlike other cities in Tucson, our towing ordinance allowed some of the sleazier towing outfits, predatory towing outfits, to see a car that's in a parking lot at night and tow them. Might be no signs. So we implemented, based on working with the industry and looking at what's been done elsewhere in the state, a pretty strict towing ordinance for towing from private lots to prevent the predatory nature of it and to set up the ground rules. Most of the towing companies were great with it. We implemented it. And at last night's session, we did some tweaks. There were some elements of it that didn't make sense for the good towing companies, and they asked for some changes, and we made that. So know now that if you're going to be towed, the towing company will have to take a picture with your car with a sign in the picture and some other things, and they'll take pictures of the cars from different angles. So if it gets damaged while it's being towed or in the towing, and there's certain regulations about the hours you can pick up and how much they can charge. So we're doing best practices now in Tucson for towing.
We haven't talked about the transit. What was the final decision about for the next fiscal year for free bus service?
We're keeping free bus service. If things turn sour when we look at the budget, how it's proceeding in December, we have the opportunity then to start the process to bring them back. Since we have made the bus and the streetcar free, we have to go through an equity process that the federal government requires to make sure that the fees that we would be applying are equitable. And that would take anywhere from 4 to 6 months. So I and some of my colleagues are very committed to doing the free transit. It benefits working people. It benefits students. It benefits the University of Arizona, even though they won't contribute to the cost. And it benefits people who are visiting Tucson. You can fly into Tucson and not need a rental car to get around to most places using our public transit, and that's pretty exciting.
There is the safety concerns, right?
What sort of safety concerns?
Safety concerns on the bus.
Well, there's always been people who are problematic on the bus. When we had fares, there would be fights about whether you paid or not. Since we're in the middle of this fentanyl crisis, there's concern about people who are doing drugs on the bus, though people who do fentanyl really aren't fighters. They just sit there looking like zombies. Safety is important to our bus drivers. At one time, we only had one security guard for our entire bus system.
What? For the whole bus system?
For the whole bus system. And they can always call police.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like that's the only thing. But we have to be aware of those concerns and address them.
All right, let's talk about a big issue that people are very concerned. These giant TEP power poles may be coming through a neighborhood near you, and a lot of people are worried about it.
Yeah. TEP needs to increase their ability to bring energy to the university area. There's a substation near UMC Banner that's supplied from two other substations, one way south on Keno, one at the freeway in Grant. And so they wanted to bring a higher steel pole, 738 kV, to increase the reliability and make sure that there's more energy coming to the university that's growing and to neighborhoods. And some of the neighborhoods do have reliability.
Those are the giant.
They're giant. Poles. They're a little more stable. You know, they don't blow over in our monsoons.
Mm.
But Campbell, which is one of the major routes they wanted to use, is a gateway corridor. And Tucson wants to protect our gateway and scenic corridors from overhead transmission lines. There's also an area plan in the university that they don't want overhead new transmission lines too. So there's some undergrounding requirements that TEP has balked at. So they went through a kudos to them, a very extensive public process. And now they're regulated by the state. Now they're going to the Arizona Corporation Commission to get permission for their preferred route between these three substations. But they also have a bunch of alternate routes, and it still includes the Campbell Corridor. So there will be a public process. There's a public hearing July 8th. City of Tucson is a party to this. A group of that came out of neighborhood concerns is also intervening. So stay tuned. We'll see how this process goes.
It is a little confusing because people were voting on that franchise agreement. How does all of that fit in?
Yeah, every 10 years we sign a franchise agreement with TEP as a utility to use our streets and easements for their transmission line so that they don't have to come to us for a permit for every new transmission line. It's pretty standard stuff. There was a creative suggestion that we tack on a dollar to everybody's electric bill in the city of Tucson that would pay for the undergrounding part of Campbell. And the voters resoundingly said no, so that's not going to happen. TEP says they can't pay for the extra amount. Other people who are observing it say, sure you can. You just add it onto the rate base.
Yeah.
But they're regulated by the state, and the state will have something to say about that as well.
Yeah, because people really don't, would not like one of those giant...
In the neighborhoods, it doesn't seem...
Poles in their neighborhood.
Great. You know, we have them down parts of Grant, and putting them on Grant, I don't think it's going to be a problem. But the preferred route goes up Euclid, which is a very busy part, and, mm-hmm. and it's included in the West University neighborhood, which is a historic neighborhood. They'll have something to say about it.
You know, we brought this up with Tim Tomier, the new city manager, on Friday, and he admitted this problem with vandalism, we've just got to do something about it. More and more businesses are being hit, and it is very disturbing.
I'm glad I'm not a businessman in an area that, yes. that experiences this, and I know some business have moved mm-hmm. Or gone out of business. It's a problem that we can throw money at if we do it intelligently and help solve.
Mm-hmm.
I use discretionary money that's available to our ward to do a pilot project at Tucson Place, which is Wetmore, north of Wetmore and First, between Stone and First, the Tonto mm-hmm. to Die in, which was just a open air drug market, and
okay.
many businesses were complaining about that. We paid for a police bicycle patrol.
Okay.
And we did it for 3 months, continued for another 3 months. And they were very effective at destroying that open air market. They could come mm-hmm. up on the people selling drugs, and whereas in patrol cars, it's much harder to sneak
sure.
up.
Yeah.
In fact, there was one story, there was a drug deal going down, and they got right to the people before they even noticed that there were police here. And the guy said, oh, I thought you were Mormon missionaries. They were on bicycles.
Now, were these off-duty police officers?
No, they were paid overtime.
Paid overtime.
Yeah, and as a bicycle mm-hmm. patrol person, you have to have special training to use the bicycle. Mm-hmm. So, some police officers love doing this duty because mm-hmm. they're bicycle enthusiasts.
Yeah.
So that's just one solution. There's mm-hmm. many solutions to vandalism, but it was one that was very effective. It may be that we have support from businesses in some areas like that to use that as a security measure.
And did the homelessness issue come up as well yesterday?
Call to the audience.
In the part of the budget, or is that something?
Yes. Yeah. We didn't discuss it yesterday, mm-hmm. but we discussed the budget, I think, starting in January or February.
Right.
We take chunks of it and understand it and make suggestions. And people think that the city of Tucson's not doing a lot about homelessness, but
right.
we are. We mm-hmm. it's 2 years ago, it was a police matter. Police were the first responders, which is completely inappropriate use of police who have better things to do with their time. We set up a separate group, the Community Safety, Health, and Welfare group, mostly social workers, mm-hmm. who are the first responders and can get people services. And we are setting up low barrier shelters. Takes time. We have one up and running, the old Wildcat Inn. That's been very effective. Once someone feels comfortable, can bring their dog, can come as a couple, can bring children mm-hmm. into a place where we're not doing drug testing, can't do drugs there, but mm-hmm. but once you're in walls, once you're cleaned up, once you have clothes that look good, once you can shave regularly, you can get thinking about how do I get to that place where I have a job, where I can get my own apartment.
Yeah, rather than living in a car, right?
Yeah, and we need places that are safe for people and living in cars. You know, what if you're living in a car and your air conditioning goes out this summer? I'm hoping places that have big parking lots will consider making that a safe haven for people in cars. We could put security guard and porta potties and a place where someone who has a job but doesn't have enough money yet for apartment and because of a domestic situation mm-hmm. is there with her child.
Mm-hmm.
Living in a car in the city, especially during the summer, must be horrible.
All right, Kevin Dahl, thank you very much, and we will see you next month.
Thank you, Bill. See you then.
All right, Kevin Dahl, the vice mayor of the city of Tucson. Kevin, a Democrat representing the third ward in the city of Tucson. All right, we'll talk with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, who is waiting in the wings. He will be my guest for segments 3 and 4 of our program today. Till then, please listen to the following messages.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Looking to put some color in your garden this summer? How about Green Things? They are ready for the heat over at Green Things. And for those who think, well, none of the plants are going to survive, it's going to be 110 and before the rains come, well, contrary to the thinking that plants, there are some plants that love the heat. And if you go over to Green Things, they will not only point you in the right direction, they will walk you to the area where there are the drought and heat resistant plants at Green Things. So check it out, 3384 East River Road, greenthingsaz.com. Their sister business is Zocalo Village, zocalovillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our lifeline presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Always good to see Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, Superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District. Dr. Trujillo, always good to see you.
Yeah, good to be back, Bill. I know it's been a minute since I've been on the show.
Yeah, it's always good to have you, especially with me in studio. And I want to follow up on a story that we broke here on the Buckmaster Show. The Grand Canyon Institute, Dr. Dave Wells, released his report here on the program first yesterday about the true cost of the voucher program in Arizona. The bottom line, $337 million for fiscal year 24.
Yeah, it is absolutely negligence of the highest order that amount of money is being funneled into a private system at the expense of our traditional public schools. And quite frankly, I consider it to be the civil rights issue of our times. When you look at the comprehensive needs of the traditional public schools, when you look at the needs of our students who are not coming from any place of means, the majority of them, and to have that amount of money taken out of the coffers of the public school district and placed into a system that largely serves families of a very high level of means at the expense of our system, I think it is very, very negligent. And particularly in the fact that there's such a lack of oversight and accountability for the usage of these vouchers and the families that take them to continue on in these very elite private school
settings. Like Scottsdale was the leading, the percentage of vouchers in that particular school district, the number one district for taking the vouchers.
And that's one of the most affluent districts in the state.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I can tell you in TUSD, we know we have around 1,000 students that live inside of TUSD boundaries that are taking vouchers. And the majority of these students are going to places like Sal Point, or they're going to places like St. Augustine. They're tuition-based schools.
Yes, they are.
Where it basically the voucher just represents a reduction in their tuition. And they're students that have never really come into TUSD at all. But those dollars could be coming into TUSD. And if they were coming into TUSD, we wouldn't have to be going to the voters for things like overrides and bonds to fix up our facilities.
What happened to the accountability with the vouchers? It just got out of control.
It's shocking that these legislators that support these empowerment scholarship accounts run on platforms of personal accountability, of fiscal responsibility, of fiscal vigilance. They tell the public, they tell the electorate that they're guardians of the public dollar, yet they advocate for no measures at all whatsoever of holding these parents and these schools accountable for the way in which these dollars are spent. You've heard the same stories I have about big screen TVs being purchased
and jumping castles.
Jumping castles and surround sound systems in the home.
I mean, come on.
And there's absolutely no accountability whatsoever to make sure that these dollars are being spent in the manner that they should.
Well, it's certainly going to hurt the state budget. Okay, what about TUSD with the accountability? The voters put their confidence in you and your colleagues at TUSD to upgrade facilities. How is that moving along?
Well, we have a full bond oversight committee. We have a wonderful group of about 13 individuals representing all sectors of the TUSD community, parents. We've got some employees. We've got some business owners. We've got some accountants. So everybody coming together to make these decisions. The Bond Oversight Committee approved the first wave of funding for projects. We call it Phase One projects. It's about $27 million in projects. These projects will immediately focus on heating and cooling systems throughout the district as a priority. We're into the hot season right now, so these upgrades are sorely needed. We will also, through the first phase of these projects, be addressing gating and fencing, stronger and better and more security-minded gating and fencing across the district for security purposes, as well as security shields on our windows that I think are going to be a game changer in terms of being shatterproof, shock absorbent, and in some cases even bulletproof to be able to protect our kids and staff.
So this is something that will be done during kind of the off season, basically the summer, right?
The bulk of this work, is going to be done during downtime. We've also got a lot of parking lot renovations in this first wave of projects that are going to make our parking lots smoother, safer, better places to walk and park if you are one of our parents or one of our visitors.
And what about the heating and cooling systems?
Those are in progress actually as we speak.
So, will pretty much every school get attention?
Pretty much every school is going to get attention. The schools that are going to be targeted in the first couple of waves actually have heating and cooling systems on the brink of absolute failure.
Back from the 1950s that have been like held together with bubble gum and...
literally scotch tape and bubble gum. So we've moved all of those schools to the front of the line because we know summer school's in session right now and those systems can fail at any moment. So we're very, very happy to get that work underway.
Last summer, there was a big push to try to get more kids into the summer programs to make up for the losses that were that many encountered during the pandemic. Is there much interest this year, Dr. Trujillo, in the summer programs?
Well, there's always an interest, but we lost we lost funding because all of the COVID era
dollars.
Yeah,
because that was a free deal last year.
It was, and those COVID era dollars allowed us to offer universal summer school, every campus, get as many kids in. But those COVID-era ESSER dollars have now expired. So now we have a smaller scale summer school, and we're really targeting the summer school opportunity for students that are working off grade level and try to get them that support heading into the new school year.
What was this dust up over a proposed placement of a 5G cell tower at Collier Elementary School? Whatever happened with that?
Well, we won't be moving forward on the cell tower there at Collier. We have some folks in the community that have expressed concerns about the dangers of 5G, microwaves emanating from these towers and the potential health, the health risk that that may pose to students. I am not an expert in this area. We certainly respect the fact that people have their opinions in the community. We certainly don't want to get into who's the expert and who isn't the expert. So we had a community meeting out there at Collier, listened to our parents, and at the end of the day, the principal out there made the recommendation to not move forward. And so we won't be moving forward with this particular project.
It was a huge project, wasn't it?
Not necessarily huge. It was a singular cell phone tower. And really what the cell phone towers do in exchange for the usage of our property to install the cell phone tower, the school gets revenue from the not just the lease charges, but also any of the profits that come in from that, from putting the cell phone tower in that area. And so the lion's share of the revenue that we see goes to the school, about 70%. The district fund, we collect about 30%. So they are a revenue generator for both the district and the individual school. But of course, what we did hear from this community contingent was sort of concerns about these potential health risks.
All right, we'll pause right here. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo with me in studio. It's the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This time of year, my goodness, yes, it's very hot in Tucson, and it's considerably cooler in Tucson. We like, in Silver City, we like to say 10 degrees, but it could be 15 cooler because of the elevation being about a mile high, which mile high is about 5,500 feet above sea level. They're right in that area at Silver City. So while we go up to like 104 and beyond, you can look for Silver City to be in the low 90s, and that's about where they are right now. So it is a great getaway. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots of outdoor activities. Please consider it. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo is with me in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio last night, a very important board meeting of the TUSD governing board. The code of conduct, was there a revision made to that, Dr. Trujillo?
Yeah, last night the governing board took action to approve a series of revisions for the student code of conduct in a variety of areas. I think I want to highlight a few that I think the listening public should probably be aware of. I think the first really major, and I'll call it a victory, was adjusting the code of conduct so that discipline on kindergarten through fifth grade students isn't cumulative, right? Because we don't want to be, quote unquote, building disciplinary books on our youngest learners. So if you're a kindergartner and you make a bad decision, as they usually do,
sure,
and you fight, mm-hmm, that fight isn't going to be following you
the next year.
The next year you start over. Just because children lack the agency, the maturity, and the development to be, mm-hmm, making great decisions and certainly exercising impulse control. So I'm glad that the board took that action last night. And then also last night, the board, you know, our stance on chemical dependency and substance misuse is always to view it as a public health issue, as an opportunity and a responsibility that I think we have to address addiction and to try to provide support to students. Still accountability, but not necessarily making those offenses suspendable over the long term, right? So I think what the board did last night, they adopted a recommendation from the administration's committee to sort of differentiate out drug sharing versus drug distribution.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference between I'm showing up on campus loaded with product and cash and ready to distribute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to an expulsion for that one, and we're obviously calling law enforcement. But then we also understand that there's drug sharing, where sometimes our young people don't make great decisions. They're at the bus stop. They're taking a drag on a vape pen. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking, and then they pass it over to their friend.
Mm-hmm.
We don't consider that to be an expulsion-worthy offense.
Mm-hmm.
We think that that's poor decision-making. So now we have an actual charge for drug sharing that will allow for a lower level of suspension and pair it with substance misuse diversionary program participation so that we can get at the heart of what's making the students use. And we saw that also last night with marijuana, putting marijuana in that same category where, no, this is not leading to an expulsion or a crazy 100-day suspension. Let's look at hooking you up to a diversion program through the substance misuse prevention program. So the board took those actions last night, and there's a couple of other really great revisions that I would urge anybody listening to go online and check out.
How about these high profile that develop in these fights that develop then into a high profile, makes the news at some of the high schools? Are these people punished?
Yeah, we're actually trying to get ahead of that. I mean, when you look at the high profile incidents that,
like the one that happened at Tucson,
they involved a lot of freshmen. And so what we're doing this year differently is, we've identified some at-risk eighth graders that have lengthy disciplinary histories, and we've recruited them to be a part of the high school boost program that's going on this summer, where they're going to be given a mentor. They're going to be put in touch with a social worker. We're going to set some expectations for coming into high school, but then we're also going to provide them some resources through the boost program, how to manage your schedule, how to organize yourself for your classes, what resources are available on your campus, Tucson High, Sabino, Pueblo, Cholla, wherever you're going, Saguaro. And this is a pilot year for us doing that, but we certainly want to be in a place where we're more preventative versus reactive. Because the sad part about the Tucson High incident is once that stuff breaks out, you have very little options at that point as an administration other than basically discipline, which is suspension, or if there's a weapon involved, it becomes expulsion. And that's tough on a 14-year-old kid. And
then parents have shown up at these fights.
Yes.
How do you prevent that?
And that's where we're getting into, you know, some of the stuff that we're going to get done with the bond will make our campuses harder for those intrusions to take place.
Budget, this is a budget now. How does the ending of the gradual withdrawal of the desegregation funds, how's that shaping up for the school year budget coming up? That will be the 24-25 budget.
Yeah, so obviously the governing board, the only major, and it was pretty major, the only major expenditure change that the governing board did approve was to fund the reading and the math intervention teachers that were previously funded from COVID era dollars to now make that a desegregation expenditure and initiative. And that was approved in early April. After that, there are no more changes. We don't have any changes now to the desegregation budget. But what's happened to the desegregation budget over the last couple of years is the cost to maintain our employees and our programs have gone up, but we haven't leveled any more dollars. So we find ourselves in a situation where there's a desegregation deficit around $3 million that we're just going to go ahead and pay it with a regular district budget because we don't want to be implementing all kinds of cuts at the last minute that we think would hurt schools and departments. But we're going to set a long-term plan to work with both the public for transparency and our desegregation-funded departments to come up with a balanced budget for 25-26 so that we're spending all next year really communicating effectively, talking to the community, inviting folks to budget study sessions so that by the time we do bring a budget draft to the board a year from now, it's had a lot of community input.
How about the enrollment picture as we get into the 24 fall?
Enrollment is the fight of our life. This district is not going to be able to do the things that we need to do to be the preeminent choice in public education with enrollment continuing to either be flat or decline. We have got to grow district enrollment at least a minimum of 1%, 2% better over the next
several
years.
How many students would that be, 1%?
1% is probably going to be about 450 to 500 students.
How are you going to get those students over to you?
So we've got a pretty assertive recruitment campaign going on, using a lot of digital media streaming, doing a lot of videos on a lot of different streaming apps, and then a lot of person-to-person phone call, phone banking going on to get families back into the district. Every campus now has adopted an enrollment ambassador that is in charge of giving school-level tours. We've opened up offices in the summer so that now parents can come on in. They don't have to wait until after the July 4th weekend.
And you're open to the feedback for the experience that the parents are having.
Yep. We've got online feedback portals where you can tell us what your experience has been. We've set deadlines for campuses to complete your enrollments with new families within 48 hours. We don't want families, but we're doing everything we can, because at the end of the day, Bill, it is a hyper-competitive environment with so many charter schools and private schools competing for the same kids. And then we also have our neighbors that are also, they also have to compete. You know, our Sunnysides and our Amphis and the Flowing Wells and our Vales. So it's just, Southern Arizona in and of itself is one of the most competitive in the entire state with regard to getting kids into schools.
And this is the time you've really got to step up your game, because school will begin in a couple of months.
You don't have long. You know, school is, we're at it, I think it's August 2nd or 1st.
Wow.
So it's literally like 8 weeks out, you know, give or take.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news is schools are the infrastructure is happening, but there will be an emphasis, and there always should be, on the academic performance of the portfolio of your schools. Is that encouraging?
We don't have information yet. So the Arizona Department of Education is still calculating student growth data for Arizona school districts, which tells the district on a kid-by-kid basis how many students actually grew in skill level in both English, language, arts, and math. That information is used to determine letter grades. ADE's not done with those calculations yet, so we're still anxiously awaiting what our report card's going to be.
And your letter grades generally have been going up.
Last year was a great year for us with letter grades, and we're hoping to eat. We're always looking to build on that, but we certainly don't want to be going backwards.
All right. Summer really isn't a downtime.
No, it's not.
Is it for the administration at Tucson Unified? Dr. Trujillo, I want to wish you and yours the best. Hope you have a great summer, and we'll see you probably midsummer sometime in July. Thank you.
I'll be back in town in mid-July and happy to come on
back.
Yeah,
we'll get you back on. Really, I didn't realize school started in early August. I've still got that mindset coming from the Chicago area, where school begins the Monday or the, Tuesday after Labor Day.
I'd love for us to get back to that.
I know. All right, Dr. Trujillo, have a great summer.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
Thank you. All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster, Dr. Trujillo, and Tom Fairbanks all have the same wish for you this afternoon. Be well. Have a great afternoon.